The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra, mid-Carabao Cup semi-final second leg special. City through 10-0 on aggregate, but who will join them? Chelsea while Higuain watches on, or Spurs while their entire injured front line are absent? We'll look ahead to the FA Cup fourth round. We'll look back at an increasingly exciting title race in Scotland. There's Camara's arrest, Ronaldo's huge fine, Barcelona understandably swooping for Frenkie de Jong, and Barcelona less understandably swooping for Kevin Prince-Boateng. That plus your questions on today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. The panel today, Faye Carruthers, good morning.
Morning.
Jonathan Wilson, hello.
Morning.
Barry Glendenning, good morning.
Hello.
So yeah, Emiliano Sala's 28-year-old centre-forward Cardiff's record signing, £13 million from Nantes, who was the only passenger in a small single-engine aircraft that disappeared off Alderney on Monday night. Guernsey police said this morning, Thursday, that a search and rescue aircraft would scour the north coast of France as well as islands and rocks around Guernsey, with no realistic chance of Salah or the pilot David Ibbotson being found alive. It's just a tragedy, Jonathan, isn't it? There's not a whole lot we can add, but
yeah, I mean, it's obviously it's a tragedy. It seems sort of vaguely incredible that this can happen in the Channel, you know, the busiest shipping lane in the world, that somebody can just go missing like that. But yeah, an awful thing.
He was born in Santa Fe in Argentina, scored 42 goals for Nantes since joining from Bordeaux in 2015, particularly impressed this season. And obviously, Faye, just an outpouring of emotion from Cardiff, but especially from Nantes and from his hometown as well in Argentina.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things that whoever was up in a plane that went down, it would be a tragedy. But because of the circumstances around it, it feels that there's more of an outpouring from people because he was going, you know, to start playing in the Premier League. It's all exciting for him, and all of that around it. And then, you know, when you then hear the WhatsApp messages that were sent to his family and things like that, it's just shocking.
There's speculation, and obviously that's all it is, that it might be ice on the wings that brought it down. And again, it's a sad thing. Cardiff fans are sad, even though they've never got to see him play. I thought one Cardiff fan I read about in the newspaper put it very well. He said, look, whether he played for us or not, he signed for us, and not many players want to sign for us, and he did. So he's one of us. And therefore, we're laying out the tributes and treating him as one of our own. I saw the Sporting Intel Twitter account last night said, you know, with the caveat that this is obviously a human tragedy. He was talking about, you know, people have been asking, and it's kind of an understandable question, even if it seems a bit callous, about what's the insurance situation and will Cardiff lose out on money, will that Nantes lose out on money, and what happened. So he sort of said that, as in any other tragedy, or, you know, not necessarily a tragedy, but as far as insurance claims in general are concerned, he said insurers will seek to pass the buck to another party that's responsible, if possible. There's a high probability that some insurer will eventually be deemed liable to cover financial losses related to what is foremost a dreadful human tragedy. But whether that's a club insurer, an airline insurer, or an individual's insurer is uncertain. So, you know, again, it does seem callous to address that when no body has even been found yet. But it is a question that has been raised.
Mm. And as you said, most importantly, our thoughts, like everyone else's, with his friends and family, and with the pilot's friends and family as well, and try, as it is, to move on to football. That's what we're here to do. And the semi-final first leg and the semi-final second leg last night, Burton 0, Manchester City 1, 10-0 on aggregate. Jonathan, did we learn anything yesterday?
I didn't watch it. I think the main knock-on benefit of this was that City played a very much changed team last night, which meant they changed their under-21 team for when they played Sunderland in the Checker Trade quarter-final on Tuesday, perhaps allowing Sunderland a slightly easier passage into the semi-final of what I now think is probably the most important competition being played for in 2019.
Who have you got in the semi-final?
Don't know yet.
Oh, who could it be?
Could be Portsmouth, could be Bury, or it could be somebody else.
And I know your fans now. At what point do you start saying stop the
stop boycotting the Checker trade, and we love the Checker trade. Is it semi-final time?
Well, it was when we got 19,500 in the last round when we beat Newcastle 4-1, which definitely counts as a derby instead of 4-1, 4-0. I mean, it doesn't really matter, does it? It was a big win, and it counts. That is a derby victory, and I'm claiming my lunch off my mate who's a Geordie.
The Checker trade does sort of need a team like Sunderland or Portsmouth in the final, because they will bring a lot of people. So, you know, it all depends on who gets to the final. It could be a disaster, or it could be a really good day out. Yeah. You know, who was the Coventry one at last season? They brought loads and loads of people.
Told off by lower league fans for not really minding the Football League trying to change this competition, because no one cares about it until you get to the semi-final. So all the fans saying, "Oh, you're devaluing this really important competition." Faye, you're a lower league fan as well. No one cares. You can't devalue something that doesn't have any value. And at the start of the season, no one ever goes, "Oh, who have we got in the Checker trade?" So,
well, we won it in 2009, and you know, it was amazing. We all went to Wembley. It was very exciting. And it's not, I think, when you're looking at the FA Cup being devalued, people saying there's no point, you know, Premier League teams perhaps putting in Manchester City aside, obviously, in their first leg against Burton, putting in lower players, then I think something like the Football League Trophy, when you watch Burton get smacked 9-0 in the Carabao Cup, I think it's really important that you have something like the Football League Trophy that enables them, you know, to go on and win something, because the likelihood of them drawing, I mean, the likelihood of them getting to the semi-finals anyway was quite low. They did, and that's amazing. But the likelihood of them beating Manchester City and getting to the final, you know, was quite unlikely. So the fact that teams like Burton, etc., could go to Wembley and play in the Football League Trophy, I don't think you should devalue it, because there are lots of fans who want that opportunity, regardless of where you believe that competition stands.
Bristol Rovers, the other team in the semi-finals. And the draw, I can't believe you didn't know this, given that there's actually probably about a 30% chance you'd end up presenting it, is on the Jim White show tomorrow.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right. So
it'll be amazing. I think we can.
If he's off sick, then I'll get to do the Checker Trade Trophy draw. Something I'm excited. Anyway, more importantly, or equally importantly, it's Chelsea Spurs tonight. Spurs 1-0 up on aggregate. Since then, you know, they've lost their entire front line. Faye, you're going.
I am. I'm really looking forward to it, actually, because both sides have a story going into this. It was going to be an exciting game anyway, because it's Chelsea and Tottenham, and, you know, love that history regardless. But particularly when you wonder what Mauricio Pochettino is going to do. He's missing Dele Alli, Harry Kane, Moussa Sissoko still going to be out. Might see Lucas Moura back potentially. Obviously, Son is out at the Asian Cup as well. It's going to be really interesting who he starts, bearing in mind the disaster that was Fernando Llorente against Fulham on Sunday. I hate saying that because he's such a nice guy. So that's interesting. And then you've got the whole leadership question from Maurizio Sarri, questioning whether Hazard is a leader, digging his players out for motivation. So you're wondering whether or not that is going to inspire Chelsea to do something and want to do one over on Tottenham. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting game.
Hazard might be excited, Jonathan, because this might be the last chance he gets to play as a false nine, which is his dream, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know where do you want me to go with that?
Well, I could go on the false nine story, because it's 125 years since the first false nine.
And has The Guardian put that piece up?
Its history since is fascinating, written by Jonathan Wilson in The Guardian. For those that can't be bothered to read it, why is it so fascinating?
Well, I wrote that piece last week, and it got delayed because of the whole Bielsa thing. So you're relying on me remembering something I wrote about 8 days ago.
Okay.
But
I do remember when it arrived in the office, the fact that you knew and wrote about when the false nine was used for the very first time was the source of much mirth among your colleagues.
Well, you say this like you don't remember me doing it literally on your radio show about a month ago. The same story. Geo Smith of the Corinthians in the 1890s appears to have been the first false nine. Obviously, the game was very different then. there weren't numbers hadn't been invented in football.
There was a false nine before there was even a real nine.
Yeah, because numbers only introduced in the early 1930s.
Okay.
And when numbers were first introduced, one team was 1 to 11, the other was 12 to 22.
Ah.
So you would have had a false 20.
Hmm.
And then in Argentina in the 1920s, and Independiente played with what they called a conductor, centre forward, so just a conductor, somebody who played deeper in sort of if you imagine a five-man forward line in a sort of shallow V shape. Luis Ravachino, I think his name was.
You could say anything, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, people will check, and they can check in my very popular book, Inverting the Pyramid. or even in Angels with Dirty Faces. I probably recycled that story.
Wouldn't be like you.
It was popularised in Europe. And this is in my forthcoming book, which you'll be able to buy from August, but doesn't have a title yet. Martin Bukovi, great Hungarian coach in Zagreb in the 1940s, experimented with pulling his centre-forward back. He took that to Hungary. And, had Nana Hidikuti with the great Hungarian team who beat England 6-3 at Wembley, playing in that role and confusing defences, centre-halves who are used to having a centre-forward to play against. But the point I make in that piece is that we're now very familiar with the idea of a false nine, and yet there's not really any team who has played with a false nine for a protracted period. That I think maybe you can say Liverpool with Firmino, but even they've changed that this season. They've played 4-2-3-1 at times. So it seems to be, I think it's partly because to be successful as a false nine, you need quite a unique set of characteristics as a player, but it also seems to be a tactic among many rather than something you'd use as your default.
Hmm. There might not be any centre forwards on the pitch tonight, but then Gonzalo Higuain turns up. Is he the answer, Barry, for Chelsea?
He might be. It depends on how he settles into life in the Premier League. He has apparently had the worst year of his professional career, but he's undeniably a good player. He had the best season of his career playing for Maurizio Sarri at Napoli. And if it's one of those signings, you look at it could be an absolute disaster or could be inspired. We only time will tell. Chelsea do have a bit of a history of getting in strikers who suddenly completely lose their mojo. He may be another, but I'm looking forward to seeing how he gets on. I mean, he's obviously never played in the Premier League before. It may take him a while to adjust, but if he can hit the ground running, I'd imagine he could do very well.
I think this issue of his form is quite interesting, actually, because, I mean, it is widely regarded that it is his worst season of his career, but he actually started the season quite well, and it was only after Milan played Juve and he got sent off and had a massive tantrum that his form's plummeted. So he still scored 6 goals this season, so he went 9 games out scoring after that red card. And I think he is a very sort of sensitive personality. I think he's quite easily upset. And I think that's possibly why he has an unfortunate reputation of missing big chances in the biggest games, the World Cup final and the Copa America final. But also, when he was at Napoli, I think he missed 3 penalties in a row. And Rafa Benitez, the manager, and he was asked, or maybe one of his staff was asked, why is Higuain still on penalties? And the answer was, it would devastate him so much to be taken off penalties. That blow to his confidence would be so great. It's better to have him taking penalties and missing them than not taking them.
It seems quite strange then that he enjoyed the best form of his career playing for a manager who regularly criticises his players in public.
Well, sorry.
Yeah.
I don't think so. He does regularly criticise his players in public. I think this is where you have to be slightly... attacks on players in public, I think you have to sort of look at the context behind them. Sarri is a very sort of paternalistic manager. I don't think Sarri's fallen out with anybody, certainly not a regular first team of his, particularly ever in his career. And I think there's sort of a warmth between him and his players that maybe doesn't exist between certain other managers and their players. And so when he criticises them in public, I think the effect, and we'll see how this works, it may be this goes horribly wrong, but I think the effect may be different to when, say, Conte, where there is a gulf between him and the players. And I think players may react slightly differently to that.
Well, it's a question.
Is this guy being a nice guy all the time and suddenly he's kind of calling you out? That probably makes you sort of go, oh, actually, maybe I could do something different here, rather than just the guy who's always ranting.
Yeah, well, that's a question from Sarah that says, how is Sarri any different from Mourinho as regards to his whining? I mean, can we call him a composite of Pep on the pitch philosophy and Mourinho off it? Mordiola or Pepperino, he suggests.
Pepperino.
You know, are we giving him a bit of a pass, Faye, for his whining?
Yeah, I don't think he's whining either. I think he had a point that he wanted to make, and he made it quite succinctly. And I don't... As Jonathan said, it'll be really interesting to see whether or not that has an effect tonight, or if it goes down the same route that it went with Mourinho and with Conte, because this is a similar group of players that they had. So it will highlight whether or not the issue is perhaps in the Chelsea dressing room, or if the issue is with the manager and the gulf between the players and the manager, and whether this more paternalistic type manager will work better with these players, and that they will go out and put in a performance tonight. But I don't think he's been whining. He was annoyed with that performance, and I think he was right to be.
I think you're comparing apples and oranges, comparing him and Mourinho, because many of the things Mourinho comes out with are patently absurd and often untrue, and
and almost invariably self-serving. Whereas I don't think you can say sorry. I mean, okay, to an extent, sorry's attack is self-serving and it deflects. It's not his fault. But Mourinho's are so blatantly self-serving that, again, I think the reaction might be quite different.
Higuain's got one goal in the nine games since he was sent off. Strange, he's very sensitive. I mean, Morata looks like he's about to burst into tears at any point, doesn't he? It's strange to get another. I think very sensitive centre-forward.
I think, to be fair to Alvaro Morata, he had a lot of other things going on off the pitch
that
have affected his confidence, his morale, etc. And so I think that's slightly different. But I know what you mean in terms of sensitive players. You need somebody who maybe can just pick their head up and carry on. But unfortunately, we live in a world where there is a mixture of personalities, and so you're going to get football teams where there is a mixture of personalities.
Here's a question from Daniel. How bad would the Spurs injury crisis need to be before Vincent Janssen makes the bench? Do you think Pochettino would pick himself before that?
Well, he seems to have no faith whatsoever in Janssen, and I think Janssen is desperate to leave the club, so much so that apparently he sent his own medical records to some Turkish club to prove that he was fit enough to be signed if they wanted him. So he's hawking himself around Europe, but Turkey seems to be the destination. I think he spent the first half of the season on loan in Turkey and then got injured and came back. But he's, I think, fit to play if required.
Yeah, rumours of Burnley, but
I don't think he will be. There is any chance of him getting in Pochettino's side.
No, he's been playing for the under-23s.
Yeah, rumours of Burnley, and you wonder how many not very quick target men do Burnley need. You know, you play Vokes, Wood, Barnes and Janssen in a spectacularly one-paced attack.
And three England goalkeepers as well on the same side.
Dele Alli faces 6 weeks off at least after that hamstring injury was as bad as that.
Do you know what I think the big worry about that Alli hamstring? I mean, obviously it's bad that he's out for 6 weeks, but it was the fact that he wasn't really doing anything. It wasn't like he was stretching. It wasn't like he was in a challenge. He was just running towards the side of the pitch. And that suggests, I mean, obviously, I preface this by saying I'm not a doctor, but that suggests it's a fatigue-related injury. And that you then worry about. So, I mean, given how tired Winks and Sissoko looked in the first leg of the semi-final, you do start to worry about Tottenham's squad depth.
Mm. But Spurs fans must be just desperate to sign anybody, you know? And Pochettino has said they're not going to change their policy. They don't really have any money because of the stadium.
Well, what he doesn't want is, I think Pochettino wants a squad that has the right personalities in it. He doesn't want, you know, one bad egg to ruin the dynamic that they've got there. And so I was at his press conference last week before the Fulham game, and he was saying he doesn't want to sign, for example, Giuseppe Rossi. He said, no, that's not a probability. And I think the main reason for that is that they don't want to be desperate to go into this kind of...
But they've got so many good eggs. Surely one, you know, one potentially bad egg.
They could get Camara from Fulham. He seems to...
We'll get on to that. Anyway, look, if you don't want to know the result, then look away now. But it hasn't happened yet, so we don't know it. Come on, you Spurs. That'll do for part one. In part two, we'll begin with Fit Bar Corner, Baz. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. On the 15th of March, we've got another live show, Barry.
Hurrah.
At a place called Earth. I mean, that's pretty vague. If you can get there, come along. It's in East London, is Earth. So come to that, please. Me, you, plus two others. As yet undecided. Owen says, on the subject of, we did two live shows in Dublin. Thanks very much, everyone, for coming. How's Barry Glendening's rib? You think you fractured a rib while doing an impression of Robbie Keane celebrating?
Well, it was actually an impression of a Jürgen Klinsmann diving. I almost knocked over a table full of drink.
If you confuse Jürgen Klinsmann and Robbie Keane celebrations, that's a really bad impression. Or it's gone really badly wrong.
No, there were two separate impressions. One, it was a game of charades. That's how rock and roll our live shows are. So I sustained, I think it's now cartilage
in the intercostals.
Damage rather than a fractured rib. But like yourself, I'm not a doctor either, and I couldn't be bothered going to one to find out.
So it was the Jürgen Klinsmann one when you broke your rib. It was the Robbie Keane one when you knocked over a table of beer.
Yes.
So which order did you do them in? Because did you exacerbate the Klinsmann dive injury by then doing a forward roll?
Yes. Mm.
Right. Were there any other Tottenham forwards you featured in your...
No one could get Stefan Iversen despite his excellent impression. So look, if you want to come to that sort of... Where we've really sold it there, come along. We'll get Lars to tell his kebab story the next time he's on, because it was quite good. Right, Fitbar Corner. The title race is so tight. And a fantastic win for Kilmarnock yesterday, Barry, over Stephen Gerrard's and Jermaine Defoe and Stephen Davis's Rangers.
Yes, so Fitbar, the league, returned last night, and I suppose the result of the night was Kilmarnock beating Rangers 2-1. Jermaine Defoe made his debut for Rangers in the league, scored after 12 minutes.
From an inch out.
Well, they all count,
absolutely.
Max. And then when Rangers were 1-0 up, they completely dominated the first quarter of the game. Alfredo Morales hit the woodwork. I think he handled one in as well, which was disallowed. And Kilmarnock weathered the storm. Eamon Brophy equalised for them. And Jordan Jones, who has recently got himself in bother for publicly celebrating signing a pre-contract agreement to join Rangers in the summer, scored the winner against his new club, or a new club to be. And fans were very angry with him for celebrating on Twitter. But
they're less angry now.
They gave him a standing ovation when he was substituted at the end of the game. And what Kilmarnock are doing under Steve Clarke is thoroughly remarkable. Their wage bill is 13 times lower than that of Celtic. The average Kilmarnock player gets paid $62,000 a year. And Clarke took over 14 months ago. They were bottom of the league, got them up to sixth this season, and now they're second. They're just 1 point behind Celtic, having played a game more. And I heard Ali McCoist actually give an interesting stat on the radio this morning. Last year, I think they played two league games more, but in the last calendar year, Kilmarnock have actually accrued more points than anyone else in Scotland or in the Scottish Premiership, even more than Celtic. Pat Nevin has said of Steve Clarke, you know, former manager of West Brom and Reading, I think people were surprised when he took the Kilmarnock job. I think maybe they thought it was possibly beneath him, with the greatest respect to them. But Pat Nevin, when asked about what's the secret of his success, he said, Steve can actually organise teams, no square pegs in round holes. He knows the capabilities and weaknesses of his players, knows where he can put them so those weaknesses won't be shown up. So they're doing incredibly well, and their supporters are genuinely hopeful they could win the league.
And Aberdeen are still in it as well, aren't they? You can't write them off.
Yeah, I mean, you've Celtic top on 45 points. They beat bottom club St Mirren 4-0 last night. Kilmarnock are a point behind them. Rangers 3 points behind Celtic, as are Aberdeen. So yeah, we've got ourselves a Scottish title race.
Celtic got a game in hand, haven't they? So.
Yes.
I mean, everyone seems to say, "Oh, we think Celtic will just have too much for everyone else," and that might be right.
Well, they should, because they're way richer than any other club in Scotland. But they haven't been having a brilliant season, so who knows what could happen. Some people are saying that Kilmarnock winning that league would be almost as impressive as Leicester's title win.
Ed says, can you give a mention in Fitbar Corner to Alex McLeish having a cameo in Stan and Ollie? Anyone know about this?
No.
He's a massive film fan, Alex McLeish. I think he's got every edition of Empire magazine ever.
Has he?
He's
a lot of Lever Arch files to keep there.
Yeah, I don't know about his storage situation. Okay. But yeah, he's a huge film buff, and yeah, he's just in the background of a scene reading a paper, I think.
He is.
Looking very like Alex McLeish.
Yeah, the director is S. Baird.
The makeup's kind of, they've done, he just looks exactly what he normally looks like, so there's been no real effort there.
Did he ask to be in that then?
Well, he met the director, John S. Baird, on an aeroplane, and Baird is a big Aberdeen fan, and they got chatting, and Alex McLeish told Baird that he was a huge part of the Laurel and Hardy fan club, is what he said. And so he said, oh, why don't you be in the film? And apparently, quote, Alex had an incredible presence on set while holding said newspaper. Well, I mean, I've met Alex McLeish. He's a lovely man.
He's a really nice guy. He has a sort of very gruff exterior and looks like he might be not a very nice man, but he's commonly regarded as one of the nicest blokes in football.
Here's a question from Mr. Gribbles. Does Kevin Prince-Boateng's Barca move give us all hope of living the dream? I was surprised to see Kevin Prince-Boateng had gone to Barcelona. Arguably, Jonathan, you know more about football than me. Were you surprised?
I was surprised. Mm. I mean, he's a very strange player, though, isn't he, Kevin Prince-Boateng? That it seems about once every 3 or 4 years he plays brilliantly for 3 or 4 months and then just disappears again. I've got literally got no idea how old he is. I mean,
31.
Is that all?
Mm.
Yeah. If you ask me, I'd have guessed 34, 35. So yeah, I don't know how I find him.
Well, it's interesting,
he's an odd player, isn't he? He's very hard to categorise. He's had a very in and out relationship with Ghana. That, you know, he'll play and be brilliant, and then suddenly he'll fall out with somebody and won't play for another 2 or 3 years. So he's got a couple of Cups of Nations in him still, hasn't he?
Hmm. And interestingly, I mean, he was always a midfielder in my eyes, but he just became a centre forward when he was at Las Palmas in sort of 2016-17.
That surprised me, actually, because I saw somebody trying to make out that him going to Barcelona wasn't that remarkable. He's clearly there as backup. He probably won't feature much. And they said that he was a striker. And I went, no, he's not.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that came as news to me,
too. He scored.
When he was at Spurs, I can't remember which manager froze him out, but he just wasn't featuring for Spurs at all. And he rocked up. He was playing in the Croydon Power League in indoor football. And I think a lot of amateur footballers were quite surprised to turn up and find they were lining up against Kevin Prince-Boateng, who obviously was 100 times better than anyone else who was involved.
Was he registered? I mean, or did they, you know, when he got booked, did they just say, your name's Jeff?
I don't know.
Maybe that's when he became a striker, because obviously, you know, there's...
Possibly.
You know, there's more fluidity in a seven-a-side game, isn't there?
I can't remember who told me that story. I have a feeling it was my mate John Jackson, who might have actually played against him.
But there's more to a player like that joining a club like Barcelona. I was just reading something that James Horncastle said, which was that players at Sassuolo said he was a leader, spoke several different languages, and so could actually be a reference point for other players.
So he's a translator, that's what he's doing.
Well, no, but just maybe more of a, you know, bringing people together, perhaps. He also said, which made me chuckle, people see him as bling, but he's actually pretty level-headed and thoughtful.
It's like you, Barry.
People see me as bling.
But actually, you're very grounded, despite your incredible fame.
And there is a chance he could play against his brother in the Champions League at some point.
Oh, well, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, they're one of only two pairs of brothers to have played against each other in the different countries in major tournaments.
Oh, I know the other one. It's Albania and Switzerland, isn't it?
It is.
Xhaka?
The Xhakas, yeah.
The Xhakas. Frankie de Jong will join Barcelona as well in the summer. 21-year-old Dutch international. City wanted him. PSG wanted him. He'll spend the rest of the season at Ajax, so he's free to play Real Madrid in the Champions League last 16 next month. How good is de Jong, Jonathan?
Well, people seem to think he's very good. I mean, it's very hard to tell, I think, with players playing in the Eredivisie. But yeah, everybody seems to rate him, so I'm sure he is very good.
Lee says, why has it been so quiet this transfer window? I've heard rumours re FFP finally being taken seriously by clubs. Also, that the next round of FFP takes effect in the summer, so there's a reset for clubs in the Premier League. Does anyone have any insight, or are most clubs skint?
I think the January window is generally very quiet. I mean, I forgot to take the last deadline day off, which is always a rookie error, because I'll end up having to man the live blog for about 9 hours straight, and it's just invariably tumbleweed, nothing happens. And Sky Sports News obviously are trying to get very excited and generate all this excitement about not a great deal happening. So
sometimes it can be, though, because Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang arrived at Arsenal last January, and that was quite a big...
There's one or two, but it's never...
There's only so much excitement that can be generated out of an athletic young man with a fancy haircut walking into a club holding an expensive wash bag, though, with, you know, accompanied by a man in a suit.
But at the time, for Arsenal fans, that was huge. They needed a little bit of that, didn't they?
Oh, they did, yes, but I'm being entirely selfish here and talking on a personal level. I didn't
care.
You've
got to spend 9 hours writing it up.
I guess the really good one was the Andy Carroll, Fernando Torres final day, whenever that was. That seems like a lifetime.
Now, the Rubinho one was good,
don't forget the Torre Andre Flo Marcus Stewart day, the Peter Reid panic buys.
Listen,
we're still going to get relegated, but it's going to cost us £15 million.
You'll be sat in a warm office. I have to stand at the training ground in freezing cold.
Oh, no. Are you one of those?
Which one are you going to?
Well, I'm split between either Arsenal or Spurs. I'm not sure yet. Depends.
At least it's a high-profile gig.
At least it's not far from your house.
Has anyone ever stuck a sex toy in your ear while you were doing that?
No. Oh, poor Alan Irvin. I can't believe that happened to him. It was so awful.
I'm very pleased you qualified that question last minute there, Barry.
Yeah, I knew what you meant.
And is Dominic Cork going to be at Stoke again in the most disgraceful use of an England hat-trick taker ever?
Yeah, I remember Dominic Cork,
yeah.
I don't remember that.
You're now inside the grounds, aren't you, after Dildo Gate?
Yeah. We now go indoors, which is actually can be quite interesting, particularly at some clubs where they do a lot of the business at the training ground, which a lot of them don't. And you kind of see people looking very stressed, and it's quite without going into too much detail because I can't. It's quite interesting to watch.
In Sunderland Till I Die, the Netflix documentary which everyone should watch, the January deadline day last year was quite interesting, where everything just went spectacularly, hideously wrong.
I think that is,
and it ended with Martin Bain slamming a door and shouting an expletive when it became apparent that no, Jack Rodwell wasn't going to go anywhere.
I still want to know how long are you there for, like 10 hours?
Yeah, you can be. Yeah,
and you don't want a transfer, like, that if one comes at the last minute, well, is that devastating for you?
Yeah, because I had Sissoko, and so I think when I was at Spurs, so this would be 2 years ago, I think, and it was when we were at White Hart Lane still, which is basically the back end of White Hart Lane where the live box is, which is not a place you really want to be hanging around 11 o'clock at night.
No.
Just you and your cameraman, with some random people wanting to jump in your shot. Not fun. But Sissoko joined that day, and that was just before. And we'd gone for dinner, me and my cameraman. And obviously there's not that many places in White Hart Lane that you can go for dinner. So we'd come to King's Cross. Thinking,
well, there's loads of Turkish restaurants.
Yeah, but,
literally hundreds of Turkish restaurants.
Turkish restaurants, yeah, but, so, Jonathan, we've not met before. I've got loads of allergies.
Okay,
and
Turkey is one of them?
Turkey's not one of them, but I can't have the flatbreads, etc. There's not a lot I can have.
Fair enough.
But basically, we went to King's Cross thinking we had loads of time because nothing was going to happen. And then we went to jump back on the tube to go to Seven Sisters on the Victoria line, and the Victoria line was down. And then I get a phone call going, it looks like Sissoko's coming to Spurs. We might need you earlier in the show. So all of a sudden, I went from being probably halfway down the show, i.e. giving me another half an hour or so, to being top of the show and having to be in it for the whole hour. So we jumped trying to flag down a cab to get back to White Hart Lane as soon as possible. So, yeah. But thank goodness Sissoko worked out eventually.
Absolutely, yeah. David Beckham's become a shareholder in Salford City, taking 10%. So joining Gary and Phil Neville, Ryan Giggs, Nicky Butt. and Paul Scholes. They've got 60% now. Peter Lim has got 40%. It's a proud moment for me, says Beckham, to join Peter Lim and the class of 92 lads as an owner of Salford City. My early years in Manchester were spent in Salford. I grew up there in many ways. So to be able to finally join the lads today, it's a great feeling. They're third in the National League, 1 point behind Leighton Orient and Solihull Moors. Is anyone else? I'm just not interested that they own Salford City.
I find it grotesque, pretty much, and I find it hilarious they're only third when they should be winning that league by about 40 points. They're behind Leighton Orient. In many ways, David Beckham also grew up in Leighton, which is where he was born and reared, and a lot of Orient fans are a bit miffed that he hasn't put money into his hometown club rather than Salford. But it's his money. He's obviously entitled to do whatever he wants with it. But
why do you think it's grotesque?
That's a bit of an overreaction or a bit of an exaggeration. What they're doing isn't that different to, you know, what, say, Chelsea and Manchester City have been criticised for doing, rich owners pumping a fortune into a club. It's what Arsene Wenger would call financial doping. You know, we had Irish striker who left Aberdeen to go and play for Salford because they were offering him more money. So I was unaware that they weren't even winning that league. I assumed they would be winning it at a canter. But I got in trouble with Phil Neville before it was Gary for criticising Salford City, so I better say no more.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
If, for example, somebody with loads of money came in to Sunderland, how would you feel then?
I suppose it depends who it was, really. I've been asked before, you know, when criticising Jose Mourinho, oh, well, you'd quite happily have him at Sunderland. I wouldn't, to be honest. I'd really rather he stayed away. Ditto, it would depend on where the money came from. I'm not that bothered about a team being really good or winning things. You know, it's not... more to
just
it than
well.
That.
No, but I would, I would
Jonathan's
it.
The man to ask because no, it's his, he is a lot more emotionally invested in Sunderland than I am.
But I'm with you. I look forward to being a mid-table championship club and I don't really want anything else. I definitely don't want to be in the same division as Newcastle because that's going to cost me lunches ultimately. I don't like the pressure anymore. I'm too old for pressure.
See, I would love somebody, a former Cambridge, I'd love Dion Dublin to get his homes under the hammer money and throw it in, you know, flip a load of properties as well and then throw it into Cambridge United. And I wouldn't find that. I don't have a problem with what they're doing at all, the class of 92. What I find interesting that everyone's so bloody obsessed that they've done it. It's like
I'm not obsessed.
No, no, you're not. I'm saying, you know, the fact that it's even...
Well, there was just, that documentary.
Which was done by the same people who did the Sunderland documentary.
Yeah. Salford's owners... You know, they're quite famous. They are entitled to put whatever money they like into the club. I'm not sure why people get so angry and wound up about it. I suppose people get angry and wound up about loads of money being put into any football club that isn't theirs. But, I just find it a little bit distasteful, you know, as if there's some sort of plucky underdog, you know, coming up through the divisions when they're anything but.
But I find myself quite torn by it, because I do quite like the idea that if you're really rich, you can take over your local club or, you know, a club that you have an affection, develop an affection for, and you can run it on your lines and you can have a certain level of success with that. But at the same time, I completely see why Leighton Orient fans are annoyed, thinking, well, we've been a league club forever long. We've had this dreadful owner who's ended up getting us out of the league, and that's making it harder for us to get back into the league. So, yeah, it's that balance between...
That's just bad luck.
Yeah, it is, but I can see why sort of nouveau riche team kind of creates.
And I know exactly what you mean, Jonathan, as well, because David Beckham is from Leighton, and so they'd sit there and go, why would you put 10% into Salford when you could, you know, potentially put some money? I can see why that would upset.
I mean, at least for Salford, he does have a connection there. It's not like he's just randomly chosen a city like Miami, for instance.
But it's almost like putting money into a club that's already got money as opposed to putting money into a club that doesn't.
But equally, I can see the fun of you and sort of four or five of your mates kind of owning a club together. So I don't know. I really don't know what to think.
Adam Rooney is the player, by the way. 17 goals he scored
Aberdeen.
This season. Solihull Moors. I had no idea that they were doing that well. So I'm rooting for them That should make the difference, shouldn't it? That'll do for part two. Part three, we'll look ahead to the FA Cup fourth round. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. We just found out in the break from Jonty on Work Experience that Tim Flowers is the manager of Solihull Moors. I can't say it. I'm trying to say Ollie Moors. That's the problem, isn't it? Anyway, well done, Jonty. That doesn't get you a job or anything. It's just impressive knowledge. Hey, the FA Cup fourth round is here. Barry, how excited are you?
I'm 6 out of 10. There's a few decent ties. Shrewsbury at home to Wolves. Portsmouth at home to QPR. I'd expect Portsmouth nearly to win that. Millwall Everton should be a good one.
AFC Wimbledon West Ham's could be good, couldn't it?
Yeah. And Barnet Brentford. So yeah, there's some good ties there. Some potential upsets, and I'm looking forward to my accumulator slowly unravelling over the course of Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday at various weird times of the day.
Would you prefer it if it was spread over a few more days, the FA Cup quarter?
Yeah, I don't think they've quite spread it over enough days. But it doesn't really make any difference to me what time games are on at. Obviously, Sheffield Wednesday fans having to go to Chelsea for a Sunday 6 p.m. kickoff.
Why are they 4 and 6 on Sunday? What's happening earlier in the day?
Nothing.
I'm guessing it's to get as big a TV audience as possible.
Well, if that's when you get the biggest audience, why isn't that the time of games anyway?
Maybe the Antiques Roadshow isn't on. That's around Country File Antiques Roadshow time, isn't it? It's when you really know the weekend's finished.
And then you've got 7:45 kickoff on Saturday, the AFC Wimbledon game. Saturday night. I'm not sure about a Saturday night.
I would move the early kickoff to late on Saturdays.
Well, the one I hit is 5:30 because it just kills the day. Are you covering it? It completely ruins the day. You've got no time before or after.
In the third round, Luton had to go up to Sheffield Wednesday for a 12:30 kickoff, which is just, that's a long way to go for a 12:30
kickoff. But the fans don't matter anymore, do they? Anyone?
They certainly don't matter to the TV companies, that's for sure.
Arsenal Manchester United is the game of the round.
I'm not so sure it is, to be honest, because I don't think either team will be particularly invested in winning the FA Cup.
Solskjaer will, surely.
It's the biggest game of the round, you know, in terms of glamour teams playing each other. But
I don't like that. That's not the FA Cup to me.
Oh, no, you need one. You need a mix.
No, I don't want to see, you know, I can watch Arsenal, Manchester United in the Premier League. I'm not that bothered about seeing them in the FA Cup.
So do you want to seed the FA Cup draw? Do you want to keep these games away from each other?
That's interesting, yeah.
Well, that'd only help.
No.
I don't.
No, absolutely not. But I would argue Millwall, Everton or Wimbledon, West Ham are the games of the round.
Yeah, that's what I would say. I love an underdog game.
You know, Millwall, Everton, a struggling championship side taking on at home to, an underachieving Premier League side.
I
would not be in the least bit surprised if Millwall beat Everton.
A plucky, new, young, Norwegian, cheery manager taking a club laden with debt to the bright lights of London. There we are. It's the magic. It's a fairy tale.
And also, then meeting each other early means that one of them will not be there to clog up the semi-finals.
That's true. Unai Emery's been singing the praises of Monchi, who's Roma's technical director after Midtjylland Tat went away. He says he's a good person and a good professional. I can say he's working in Roma, and this issue is the club's responsibility.
Sounds like a cartoon character from a cereal box.
Yeah, it does a little bit. I mean, getting the munchies. I'm happy with footballers having one name. I think technical directors need two names for me, really. I was just looking for his other name and I couldn't find it.
Gladbach.
Is that right? Munchie Gladbach. Anyway, Arsenal also went paintballing this week, which was nice.
It's not. Paintballing is horrible.
Oh, I agree.
It's thoroughly unpleasant.
Oh, you also discover how unfit you are, don't you? Because, you know, you sprint for 30 seconds and then you're bloody knackered and someone's on top of you.
I just try and find a tree I can climb up and then just relax.
Is that not a bit dangerous as well, though? You can get some nasty bruises from paintballing.
Well, especially if Lichtsteiner's playing.
And you can lose your sight as Biker Grove's tourist.
PJ!
The only time I've been paintballing was on a stag do, and at the end of it, we all had to form sort of
like a firing squad.
And it was kind of like a chicken run, and then the groom-to-be had to run through, and we just absolutely peppered him. It was like getting shot with one of those from close range really hurts.
I'm not letting anyone organise my stag do for that exact reason. And I got married a while back, but day two of my stag do will be beanbags and rom-coms.
You're having a post-stag stag do?
Yeah, we did it all the wrong way around.
Right.
Palace Spurs on Sunday. Here's an email from Andy Rockall, who says Tottenham will beat Crystal Palace in the fourth round. We'll go out in the next round. This is because of the white leaf curse. Would you like to know what the white leaf curse is?
I know what it is.
I go on then, Wilson.
White leaf welfare got eliminated in the very first round because of fielding an ineligible player.
Correct. Taiwo Odutolu.
Yeah, to come on to that. Mm-hmm. And then every team who subsequently have won on that road have kind of lost their next game.
He was banned and re-registered under a false name. Unbeknown to Whiteleaf, they were reinstated. They went out to St Albans, who went out to Taunton, who went out to Billericay, who went out to Chesterfield, who went out to Grimsby, who went out to Crystal Palace. So, yeah, good luck. Well done to Spurs for winning that game, and bad luck in the fifth round. Dortmund apparently in for Wilfried Zaha as a replacement for Pulisic. Palace want 50 million. Zaha open to the move.
It's a weird one because he failed to settle in Manchester, and I think spent a lot of time toing and froing from London because he was homesick, and Dortmund is kind of further away.
Yeah, but he's also 6 years older now than he was when he joined United, so yeah.
Fair, you made a face when I suggested that.
Yeah, because it surprises me, because I know Wilf Zaha loves Crystal Palace, and I don't see... It depends what he wants to get out of it, I suppose. But
he can't stay there forever.
He can't stay there forever, no. I know exactly what you mean. It feels like he's such an amazing player who could achieve so much more, and perhaps he won't be able to achieve that at Crystal Palace. However, he has the opportunity to go down as an absolute forever legend if he does stay there.
Or he
can
play in the Champions League.
Yeah.
And him on one flank and Jadon Sancho on the other is pretty exciting.
It is, yeah. Wayne Hennessy's been charged by the FA with bringing the game into disrepute after the alleged Nazi salute. He denies making the gesture. If found guilty, faces a minimum 5-game ban.
Minimum?
Apparently, yes, a minimum 5-game ban, yeah.
Crikey.
Chelsea Sheffield Wednesday also. Lots of pictures of Steve Bruce enjoying the cricket in Barbados before he takes over at Hillsborough. Oh, Jimmy Anderson's good, isn't he?
Oh, yes. What is it? 24 overs, 4 for 33, is that right? I mean,
superb.
Just magnificent.
On Monday, Barnett played Brentford. In other news, Fulham's Aboubakar Camara has been arrested on suspicion of actual bodily harm all over the back pages today following allegations of a fight at the club's Motspur Park training ground that's led to the striker being banned indefinitely from the venue. Police were called there shortly after 5 o'clock on Monday following reports of a violent incident. One man in his 20s was arrested on suspicion of ABH and criminal damage.
Did you feel this has been coming?
Well, apparently he arrived at the training ground supposedly looking to resolve his future at Fulham.
Well, he's done that.
Anyway,
box ticked.
After the whole penalty incident where he nicked the ball off Mitrovic and then missed it. And then he had an
altercation at yoga.
Yes.
With Mitrovic.
Mitrovic. Apparently he was talking out of turn when everyone was supposed to be quiet. And Mitrovic accused him of being disrespectful of the yoga instructor, whoever he or she was, and they came to blows and had to be separated.
You shouldn't talk during yoga, should you?
I've never been to a yoga class. I'd quite like...
Having seen your somersault in the live show, I would suggest you need to, but I think you might find it a bit difficult.
Imagine so. In my head, when I achieve some basic level of fitness, I would go, because there's a yoga centre just around the corner from where I live.
You don't have to be fit to do yoga.
You have to be fitter than I am.
No, I would totally disagree.
Really?
As somebody who does yoga, I would say if you're not fit, you should be doing yoga.
And actually, you can get...
Would it get me fit?
Yeah, it would help you get fit, definitely. But, and it would make you more flexible, which will then help you get fitter.
If I went to yoga, would I not just be ridiculously inept compared to everyone
else. No, but the whole point of yoga is that you don't compare yourself to others. It's just you.
It's just you, except you're watching everyone else while you're tripping over at the back. The thing is, they do have lots of sort of supports and cushions for the beginners. And you can do a beginner's class.
It was similar to... I had about a month where I went quite regularly, but it was like... Niles or Frazier, his description of ballroom dancing of being difficult and boring. Like I was utterly bored for 2 hours and utterly humiliated for most of that 2 hours.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm thinking, when will this end?
So everyone was busy not judging you while judging you.
Well, so there'd be a... I don't know if they were judging me, but you'd have the yoga teacher would kind of say, do this now, and I'd be getting nowhere near it. So be like, okay, why don't you sit on a chair for the next 10 minutes? And it was just like being in remedial class.
It's also a very humorless pursuit. No one's smiling.
Oh, no, it's funny if someone farts in a yoga class. That's funny.
Well, that's a different class to the one I went to. It's a special type of yoga. Anyway, Cristiano Ronaldo's admitted committing tax fraud while playing for Real Madrid, agreed to play £16.5 million after striking a deal with prosecutors and tax authorities in return for a 23-month suspended prison sentence. He had been accused of defrauding the authorities of €14.8 million in unpaid taxes between 2011 and 2014. Regional state prosecutor alleged he'd used what it deemed to be a shell company in the Virgin Islands to create a screen in order to hide his total income from Spain's tax office. It said Ronaldo intentionally did not declare income of £25 million, €28 million related to his image rights and declared €11.5 million of earnings from 2011 to 2014 when his real income was almost €43 million. How much money do you need is the question. The Asia Cup quarterfinals is taking place this weekend. Sherl says, can you briefly mention the Asian Cup and Carlos Queiroz reaching 100 games in charge of Iran with just 12 defeats and taking them to their highest ever FIFA ranking of 29. Wilson, would you like to praise Iran and Carlos?
Yeah, I mean, I think they play quite dull, unwatchable football, but they've been undeniably successful doing it. But I think Kiara's football often is quite sterile. It's very possession-heavy. But no, I think he's done a great job with Iran.
They play China.
Yeah.
And Vietnam play Japan on Thursday, today. And then tomorrow,
South Korea, Qatar, and UAE, Australia.
Yeah,
the Australia playing really badly, aren't they?
Yes,
I like seeing Australia being bad at sport.
Do you know what? I like seeing them being bad at cricket, but I find at World Cups I want them to do well in football.
You're becoming assimilated.
That is true. I mean, the current Mrs. Russian wouldn't even know they were playing, so it's not.
But presumably, she'd be miffed if she saw you actively supporting against them.
Wouldn't even know they were playing if I was doing that in front of her.
Why have you painted your face in the Iraqi flag, Max?
Pablo's been in touch on the subject of where Neil Downs is to say he's captain of Bury, and only Manchester City have scored more goals this season than Bury. So well done,
Neil. And they're
Neil.
In the Checker Trade semi. It's been a great season for Bury.
Absolutely. Ricardo Fuller has signed for Nantwich.
Okay.
Ricardo Fuller's still playing?
Yeah, well, for Nantwich.
How old is he?
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Must be 40, sure.
Very good question. Your guesses, please, for Ricardo.
40, 41.
41, Faye. Don't look it up.
Oh, 39.
I've got 43.
He is 39 years old.
I didn't look it up, by the way.
31st of October.
I mean, I think we need an inquiry into this before we give you the Ricardo Fuller Age Cup.
But what a trophy. We're going to make it bigger than the Stanley Cup, which is an obscenely large trophy for guessing Ricardo Fuller's
age. How big is the Everton Cup? Make it slightly bigger than that.
It's huge, the Everton Cup. The thing about the Ricardo...
Would we get it in the studio, the Everton Cup?
No, no. The thing about the Ricardo Fuller trophy is really... That's the best it's ever going to be, the way we played it there. Because when you come back next year, you should all know, shouldn't you?
I've still got place on my mantelpiece.
Did Ricardo Fuller play with... Was it earplugs he used to play with?
Did he?
Yeah, like some racehorses need to have earplugs put in, I think, because they get spooked by the noise of the crowd. I'm not saying Ricardo Fuller was spooked by the noise of the crowd at the Britannia Stadium, but... I have a feeling he used to, for some weird reason, he used to have to wear earplugs.
That's a random piece of knowledge.
He had big earrings, didn't he, that he wore? Mm. Maybe you're getting them muddled up.
No, I know.
Which is why you can't sleep on planes, but you look, it's back to your bling life, isn't it? Your diamond-encrusted earrings. that you wear when you're flying. Middlesbrough have just signed John Obi Mikel.
Have they?
Here we go. Come on then, guesses everyone.
Joey McHale's age. Okay, I know this. He was he made his international debut in a 2-0 win for Nigeria over Zimbabwe in Port Said in 2006 as an 18-year-old. So that was January 2006. He was 18. This is now 2019. Had 13 to 18. He's 31.
Wow.
You know, who needs Rain Man?
He scored a goal from just outside the box in that game and I think took the corner that led to the other goal. Nigeria won it 2-0. And he was magnificent in that time. He was playing as number 10 in that game. But then the quarterfinal against Tunisia, he dropped back to play as a holding midfielder. A very versatile player. Thanks. Finished, don't we? Yeah,
okay. I love the fact you looked at us when you said you almost questioned. I think he took the corner, like we were all going to agree with you and no.
Tim and Paul have been in touch on the most important aspect of Monday's pod when we were discussing five-a-side bingo team of 70-year-old women with Alison, Valerie and Anita. He said, I'd like to point out that Muriel scored two very nice goals for Fiorentina against Gabbiadini's Sampdoria. And Paul says, following on from the theme earlier in the week of Premier League bingo ladies, nothing can top the golden age of Edie, May and Flo. look, that'll do for today. Anyway, cheers, Barry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Faye.
Thanks, Max.
Cheers, Wilson.
Cheers.
We'll be back on Monday.